And we are scheduled for public hearing.
Public hearing on
Senate Bill 5502.
5502, open the public hearing. And Ann, you want to come up and? You're not overwhelmed. Hopefully we'll get some other members to show up when they see us on TV.
Chair Hill. For the record, my name is Ann Terry, and I'm the Acting Chief Information Officer for the Department of Administrative Services Information Resources Management Division. Today, the chair and the legislative fiscal analyst, Dallas, have agreed to let us start this presentation with a very brief presentation on the e-government strategy. We have, DAS IRMD has several policy option packages that relate to the implementation of this strategy, and this is intended to provide an overview of the e-government strategy and how each of the POPs relate to it. Following that, we will go into the detailed program description and proceed in that way. The first slide I would refer you to is on page 15. And this is a depiction of what the current government service delivery model is, where citizens attain service through three channels, over the counter, by telephone, through the mail. Each transaction requires a request from the citizen, delivery, and in some cases, collection and processing of a payment. With electronic government, the future service delivery model, we're simply adding a fourth channel. Each transaction includes the same elements presented over the mail, over the phone, counter, and mail, a request and delivery of product or service, and so on. So the question is, why add a fourth delivery channel for e-government? And what we've outlined here is the expectations that citizens expect. They expect our government to be accessible as Amazon or eBay with 24/7, 365 days self-service operations, quick and easy navigation, customer-friendly, seamless transactions. We are automating processes in the hope of reducing staff time and rework and accelerating service delivery. We put this slide down on how an e-government transaction works, and I realize, Representative Hill, that you understand this, but we are taking the opportunity to put this into record. The three elements of the transaction, request, delivery, and payment, are automated through the use of technology and made accessible on the web. The web applications help the citizen find the product. The fulfillment applications to process the citizen's request for the product, and the payment applications to collect payment and deliver it to the bank. On page 9, then, we begin to see what is it that we need in order to create e-government. And there are many components to create, first, the effective web application. For any agency to have a web application, it needs a place to host it, a website, a method to select the desired product or service, web forms, the ability to find the item, a search engine, and a link to agency application databases, a system interface, and a way to assist citizens, the customer service. The major elements of delivery or fulfillment in e-payment applications are software for processing and tracking, a method for delivering, the ability to collect fees, and links to the banking system, and then a way to help the citizen. What tools do we need? We need people, web designers, application programmers, system administrators, database administrators, project managers. We need equipment, servers, routers, and firewalls, software development tools, e-business software, e-business consultants. So we ask the question, why do we take an enterprise approach? And on these previous pages, we've outlined what it takes for a single agency to do electronic government. You multiply those items by the number of state agencies that will be likely to provide e-government services, this will represent a significant investment for the state of Oregon. There are several advantages to taking an enterprise approach to e-government. It's easier for the citizen to use. It's easy to locate and find the desired products and services, there are economies of scale, more efficient use of IT staff, and easier to grow as e-government transaction volume increases, uniform policy and procedures, and easier to secure. Now I'd like to talk about how the electronic government strategy is developed and managed, and I touched on this in the hearing last Wednesday, that the governor's IT roundtable purpose is to provide the management structure for making these enterprise decisions on technology, created in March 2000. You asked about the membership at the last meeting, and they are primarily agency administrators, including technology managers. The 20 largest agencies participate, but that's not the exclusive membership. And agencies headed by other elected officials also participate, including Judicial, Secretary of State, Treasury, and Legislative Administration Committee.
And let me interrupt you there. You say the purpose of the roundtable is to make decisions. How are the decisions? Is it a consensus approach? Or, I mean, I'm just curious in terms of when it comes down to it, and we have, you know, we've got you in a position where to set policy and direction, and when we are at odds, is a decision in terms of
Who's
the arbiter of
Chair Hill, members of the committee. The IT roundtable really makes recommendations to the governor through the DAS director. So they are an advisory body. I have not been to a roundtable meeting where there has been a disagreement, so I don't know how that actually occurs. I presume it's by consensus, but I think the important point is it is a recommendation to the governor. But their role is to shape IT policy, and through collaborative partnerships and information sharing. And the idea is that it crosses jurisdictional and functional boundaries. That is the purpose. And there's a great deal of talent and energy and technical expertise in the agencies around e-government. If you can look at several websites that exist today in agencies such as employment, revenue, transportation, DCBS, agriculture, parks and rec, and what our intention is to leverage those resources, leverage that talent in order to provide the enterprise approach to e-government in Oregon. We're on page 24, I think. Our role there is to provide leadership to implement the enterprise IT strategy, and we coordinate the e-government initiative, and we are to provide the central e-government service delivery. That means a secure environment, the single portal to access Oregon, the single credit card solution, and the financial transaction database. The agency participates in policy development. They provide their content, their business content, and they're a cooperative partner in e-government implementation. On to page 25. As I told you at the last meeting, the cooperative partnering model is being recommended by the steering committee to the IT roundtable. And the IT roundtable will not meet again until February 15th. This cooperative partnering model represents what I've talked about before, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because I know we need to get into the detailed program discussion for IRMD. But again, to rephrase, we have the role that is outlined here, the web portal, the agency owns and manages content, and under the cooperative partnering model, the agency can develop and host an application database if the agency meets e-government operational standards. And this would be case at a time, business case, can they meet the security standards? Does it conform with the standards that we will set for common look and feel and other standards that are in the process? Page 26 for the committee, at the beginning of this brief presentation about what the e-government IT strategy is, my intention was to provide a conceptual umbrella about e-government that would help you understand what four of the policy action packages we're presenting today are all related to e-government and have some piece of what we presented in this this part of our discussion. I think it's important to note here that the policy option package 241 was formulated prior to our decision about a management model for conducting electronic government. the elements of the package that went into the governor's budget this summer, staff, hardware, software, and consultants, were based on a comparable state model. But as I said, they were using the centralized portal, but there were some differences. This is kind of comparable to making a purchase list for the materials you need for building a house before you have design. We knew that we were doing that, and we knew that we were going forward with the design in the future. However, we did have resources to draw upon, so it's our best estimate in total. Since the time of that creation of this package, the steering committee, as we said, is adopting a model, and based on this anticipated outcome, now we have the opportunity to develop targeted costs for this initiative that now has a management model that is clear. Now we are fairly certain that we will get to that. What we're asking the committee to do is to allow us to manage to the bottom line while we keep the committee and the legislature informed in a structured way of our progress to this goal. We expect the same kind of stringent review that you give to any other agency that comes in here, as in the past, and we expect to continue to report to the legislature and to the committees on this. It's a completely different approach we're talking about here for funding, and I will skip this part of the conversation until we talk specifically about this package. I'll move to page 27. These are the two other policy option packages, the security position that's required for enterprise-wide security program, and policy option package 243 in the general government data center. These are people that are required to host critical agency applications, systems administrators, and database administrators. And lastly, top 345, this is funding for two e-government programs, e-procurement and automated employee benefits. In addition, this package includes the development of a central group of project managers that will manage enterprise-wide technology projects. So at this point, for the e-government IT strategy, our next steps are adoption of that e-government management model on February 15th, and I've listed the legislation that must be passed. I believe all of these bills are in the substantive committees on advancing e-government, and one has passed to the floor. That would be digital signatures. So that concludes the framework that I'm going to present to you, that an umbrella to put the policy option packages that we're going to discuss today. With your permission, I can move into the program.
Are there any questions at this point? Sir, do you?
Mr. Chairman, could we have a little explanation on how do you provide security for these programs? Because unless people feel confident that the information they give you is not going to be shared by everybody who watches the website, people would not have enough confidence to do it. Can you explain how is that done so people can feel very confident that information will be strictly restricted?
Chair Hill, Senator Yee, members of the committee, to your question about the privacy of information, there is a policy decision before the legislature, and this is in the bill, House Bill 2038, Citizens' Privacy Concerns in Oregon Public Records Law.
What's the House Bill number?
2038.
Oh, that's next step.
Yes. So that's the policy decision that needs to be made. I think I am very unqualified to answer how we will implement security, but I'll tell you that because I'm not the technical person, but there's someone on my staff who could explain that to you in detail if you wish. But it is a high priority for us. One of the policy office packages we're proposing is a security officer for the state of Oregon who is a limited duration employee now, who's setting up the policy guidelines and the protocols to provide a secure environment that addresses concerns exactly, especially over financial transaction databases and information about credit cards. They're wanting for specific personal information. So security is a high priority from the technical side, and it is something that is before the legislature on the policy side to work on.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up question. So if somebody provides credit card information, how can you be assured that that credit card information is not going to be known by everybody else who uses the program?
Chair Hill, Senator Yee, and members of the committee, I think at the moment there's some question that under Oregon's public records law, that credit card information, if we collect it and hold it, if we were asked for it, would have to be provided. And this is one of the policy issues that's before the committees now, is to look at those public records laws and ensure that we have the statute behind us that says that we can't divulge that information. Beyond that, there are many ways technically to secure information at many different levels, and that's a conversation that is fairly technical in nature, and I don't feel really qualified to talk about that in detail here, but I would offer to bring someone to your office and tell you how we're proposing to secure this environment. I could bring our security officer if you would like.
Yes, I would appreciate that information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question in regards, I agree with your enterprise solution. I think it's a good idea, but I'm wondering if DAS has done any analysis in regard to, many of us sit on ways, I mean, Senator Yee and I sat on a budget committee this morning for the, and Senator Duncan sat on a budget committee this morning for the, for human services, but we had what's the name of the board? Oregon Medical Examiners. They put in a bunch of extra money for an e-commerce solution as well, which I assume part of that is going to be fees that are going to be returned back to your department. But has DAS done any kind of analysis? If we spend this money and put the money up front in terms of, you know, they said they had like 25% of their physicians were renewing in some kind of credit card fashion, and I would assume that a similar amount, maybe through an e-commerce solution, might renew their pieces. Have we looked at the personnel costs in the various departments versus the money that we're putting in the e-commerce solution to see what kind of cost-benefit analysis we're going to have by putting these numbers forward? And are we going to reduce some savings and some processing time and some other things, mailing costs, et cetera, in the other departments?
Mr. Chair, one additional item. There's a $28,000 item in there for the service fee for credit cards, too.
Right. There's a $28,000 in addition to some electronic stuff, and I was assured this morning that that would come to this committee. But I guess my concern is, you know, what kind of cost-benefit savings are we going to get in personnel costs, in transaction, you know, in our time costs if we adopt a solution, and what has DAS done to do some sort of analysis on an agency-by-agency standpoint for those agencies that are going to sign up for this e-commerce solution?
Chair Hill, Representative Patridge, and members of the committee, DAS IR&D has not done cost-benefit analysis on each agency's business case. I would say that it is the agency's responsibility to make their business case on why an e-commerce, what kind of savings would be attached to their e-commerce initiative. In terms of the resource that we're talking about, like pooling here in the cooperative partnering model that we're proposing, and we're proposing this to be an enterprise solution, and the financing of our policy option package 241, part of that is making a decision that the kinds of e-commerce activities that are planned by the agencies, that we look at those as the enterprise and make decisions about which part of those expenditures that they're planning and are in the governor's recommended budget should be brought centrally, provide the centralized services that we're talking about, security, Access Oregon, secure credit card transactions, and which part of that resource belongs in the agency to expend. In terms of the cost benefit, we haven't done that for the state. I think that's the direct answer to your question. We anticipate that there will be cost savings in reduction in staff time for processing these requests. And I have anecdotal experience from Secretary of State where we did provide access to the Uniform Commercial Code lien filing Oracle database and found that there was an immense reduction in telephone calls to staff. It reduced the amount of person-to-person kind of activity that took place with staff. So I just have anecdotal information.
Mr. Chair, just as a follow-up or comment, I guess I'm concerned that my concern is that I, at least at the budgets that I've looked at from a cursory standpoint, everyone's got ads in for the e-commerce particular piece, and I don't know if they're, you know, shifting money within the department or how they're dealing with the FTE and the lower mail costs and some of those kinds of things. And the processing, of course, takes a lot of time, and I would think this would save quite a bit of time in processing. I'm just concerned, I guess, that there's been no you know, personnel or financial analysis done of what kind of savings we're gonna capture. And hopefully this committee will get some of it, but I mean, since DAS is the one who's evaluating everyone's budgets as well, I guess I feel like the onus should be on DAS to help, one, gather that information so that, I mean, we can kind of see, you know, what departments you guys think are going to opt in within the current budget, and a column for what their costs are or what they're asking for in the governor's approved budget, and then lined up next to those are what cost savings and what departments they think they're going to have, whether it be mail, whether it be reduction in FTE, whether it be anything, or, you know, a lot of electronic solutions don't necessarily save money either, and I know that as well, you know, and if they're just saying we're not going to save any money, this is just a convenience for our customers, I'd just like to know up front what that is before we're being asked to move forward a very expensive solution that may not save the state any money but may just provide better customer service so that we can as a committee know those things, because I know we're starting to look at other budgets relatively quickly. And so can you provide that analysis? Is that available? Can we get it through the ABIS system? Is that possible? I mean, to identify those policy option packages at least. And
Chair Hill, Representative Patridge, I can tell you that for the ABIS who will be coming with technology initiatives to this committee, our analysts in strategic planning and review will be coming with that committee, with that agency. I will have to do some research on the answers to your question about what's available in ABIS. We will make an effort to identify all of the e-government initiatives that are going to come to you before this committee that are in the governor's recommended budget. We can do that.
But what I'm looking for is then the next step to ask the agencies, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, to ask the agencies then where they're going to pick this up. Because mm-hmm. most of it, all I'm seeing is an ad, and I don't know if that's a full ad in every agency or not. I mean, are they fully adding, or are they reducing some staff in order to pay for it and just asking for a percentage of what they need in order to pay the fees to DAS to implement the e-government solution? Those are what I'm looking at. I mean, if one department just needs all this extra money and the other department says, well, we're going to reduce one FTE, I want to know, why can't the other department do the same thing?
Chair Hill, Representative Patrick. I think that by virtue of the question you've asked today, this will inform anyone who comes before your committee, and our analysts will be working with them to make certain that they have those answers for you.
Well, just one more. But part of my problem is we need to capture that up front, because every agency may come, we may be 3 months or 4 months into this process, and every agency may come in and ask for more money, and then we get, you know, well, then we get to the other agencies and they say, well, we're going to cut an FTE and we're going to get this savings here, and then we've already let these other budgets through. And that's kind of why we need a global piece, and we need a global piece to look at your package and how we pay for your package, and can your package be paid for internally with savings from other departments or not.
Chair Hill, Representative Patridge, the intention in the agreement in the IT roundtable is for the agencies together to make that commitment and to make that commitment to the funding. So we will get there, and you will get that information.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think also I searched through my notes after things in terms of, and I can get you some information on the total cost of the transactions. That by moving to electronic transactions, when you start looking at the total cost to move a paper purchase order through an organization, you're up at $100 to $150 a transaction. Going to electronic, you take it down to $10, and if you get 100% efficiency, you can get it down to like a buck. And so there is tremendous savings in the efficiency you drive through. But I understand where you're driving from is if everybody's adding it as a policy option package, what happens to the efficiencies? And and I think in terms of at this juncture, we're going to have to sort of balance that out to sort of see that and make sure we've got the right, we're capturing the right data so the next time we can capture it and get the efficiencies. We're not speaking up loud enough. We'll try to. I won't lean back.
Okay. Any further questions? Let me take you back to slide 19, the web application. The four elements, five elements going into it. Can you explain to me, this gets into the e-commerce? So you're going to have you're moving all web hosting into the e-commerce and e-government center? Or is that something? I'm just trying to make sure that I understand that we're going to place all web hosting within that organization.
Chair Hill, I think this slide may be a little misleading. We just put this in to give a general overview of what it takes to put together a e-government transaction that would work. We are not proposing to move all existing web applications in the state into a central hosting environment. What we're proposing is that DAS IRMD would be the build, own, and maintain the Access Oregon portal, also the secure environment for financial transactions and handle all payment solutions. And we would be the default website for those agencies who are new and are looking at new investments in order to do this that would come to DAS. And then for those existing application areas, and there are many and they're deep and there are sunk costs there, we would look at their ability, the business case that would have to be made for maintaining their own website at an agency, building a new one, and they would have to meet the stringent standards that we are putting together over a whole array of areas. Plus, the IT Roundtable Steering Committee agreed that there would be a peer review process for this. It would not just be DAS IRMD, but a peer review and trusted partners. Because there is concern among the agencies who have confidential and critical data that it's very important that every link on the website is secure and that someone could put up a website and open a door into their data that they don't want to. So everybody is very interested that we all meet these standards, and they're participating in setting the standards. So I've wandered from your questions. I hope I answered.
Well, I think you opened my response to your answer is, well, why wouldn't we be moving to hosting everything? I mean, I come from the world where this is not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
This is happens every day, and we gain great efficiencies, and many of the agencies don't have confidential information, and they're not allowing access to any information that would be confidential. So, it almost sort of like to understand which agencies have access into databases which have confidential information that they're displaying on the web.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Hill. I didn't mean to imply that agencies are displaying confidential information.
Or that they're accessing databases, which if exposed to the world, mm-hmm. would be a breach of security. I'm just curious in terms of, do we know, have we done any assessments in terms of what the universe is out there, in terms of for these things, versus just simply people putting up web pages and, I mean, we've got different levels, and I'm just, you know, curious in terms of, you know, so who are we talking about who has applications that are letting public access certain things but not getting further into a database?
Chair Hill, what I was referring to is in our conversations in the IT Steering Committee around security and how stringent it should be. There were a number of agencies around the table, specifically the Department of Revenue and the Director, Elizabeth Harchenko, talking about, you know, if I am going to be on a network with trusted partners who are have internet access to their databases, and that might open a door for them to get into her database. They might not have as stringent standards as they do at Revenue, and at Revenue they're very stringent their standards, and that is the concern. And that's where we're talking about making certain that we, any agency that is allowed to host direct access to their database from their server, that they have to meet these stringent security standards.
So that would beg the reason why we want people hosting in a public facility which is firewalled off so that we don't have these problems, rather than letting agencies break holes into their own data centers. So, okay. Now I understand where the security concern is. It's not web hosting.
No.
It's access on the network,
right,
and the potential for someone hacking into the network. Okay, so we're talking about a network security issue.
Right, and we're setting a high bar, and the higher the bar is, the more expensive it is, so the business case has to be very solid on why you would host it yourself.
I understand that.
Okay. If we move into the detailed program descriptions on page 30, the first section we're going to talk about is the Enterprise Application Services. And this group is a merger of the General Government Data Center, Systems Development Consulting, the Oregon Center for Electronic Commerce and Government, and the Oregon Geospatial Data Clearinghouse. The services include in the, if you'll excuse the use of acronyms, GGDC, Computer Services, Open Systems Platforms, Archive and Backup, Data Warehouse Databases, Database Management, Microfiche Processing, and very limited printing and distribution. The next bullet, Systems Development and Consulting, provides application programming, mainframe programming, mid-range programming, and you can see the list. Database support, they do web development for small agencies, and limited Unix application support. The third functional area within Enterprise Application Services, OCECG, this is the Oregon Center for Electronic Commerce and Government, has been providing statewide planning and policy development for transactions over the Internet. And the Oregon Geospatial Data Clearinghouse coordinates geographic information systems activities in the state, and they facilitate communication about GIS issues, they maintain a website, and they host spatial data that's shared by state agencies and local governments and educational institutions, federal agencies and citizens, and they manage that shared spatial data asset. Growth in this area is based on centralized IT projects and the need to support the new electronic government infrastructure. Statewide applications and systems support is expected to grow as a result of increasing utilization. The performance measures that are used in the General Government Data Center are measured by server uptime or availability, systems transactions, job count, archive storage and performance. Systems Development and Consulting measures performance by the amount of new business that's generated, the number of rework hours on programming that they do, the revenue they generate, customer satisfaction, turnaround time, and number of service requests for major systems. The OCECG measures its performance on the implementation of the executive order on e-government. The Oregon Geospatial Data Clearinghouse communication as measured by the number of website hits, the number of data downloads, and the number of data sets held in common for the data that we have oversight over. And in this section, we have the policy option package 241 that maintains the Oregon Center for Electronic Commerce and Government. And the purpose of this package is to avoid duplication of staff throughout state government by maintaining a core of electronic government technical expertise within the division. This is necessary for administration of centralized credit card use and other financial activities over the Internet.
Mr. Chair, can I ask another question? I'm confused, and maybe you explained it, and I just didn't pick it up. When you talk about the going back on page 30, you talk about the group is a merger of. Mm-hmm. Is it a merger? Those entities still exist.
Yes.
So they've not been merged. So they exist, but they become, for practical purposes, how does it go?
Chair Hill, Senator Duncan, I can understand why this is confusing. I consider this a virtual organization. These are the parts of the existing organization. There's sections that stand alone, four sections, mm-hmm. with managers and a coordinator at the head of them.
Right.
And what they do is their services, when they work with each other, they are, when they provide a service, they are interdependent on each other. So,
Mr. Chair, if I may ask, continue. Okay, when they merge, what do you call? What do they call? Or do they have a title?
Chair Hill, Senator Duncan, we're calling them Enterprise Application Services, EAS. And on the organization chart that it occurs at the on page 5 of the original.
I should have picked that up earlier, then, shouldn't I?
You'll see that we've grouped our organization in 5 sections.
I see it here.
And so we're grouping the application-related sections together under Enterprise Application Services, and they contain these 4 separate functional areas. Similarly, when we
stayed in the block, and others went into the other format. Okay. Thank you.
The back on page 33, the policy option package 243 for the General Government Data Center Open Systems Team. The purpose of this package is to create the technical staff and the systems environment capacity necessary to support mission-critical applications being requested by several agencies for statewide use. And without these additions, these projects cannot be delivered. For example, we have several statewide systems that are going to be coming online. The budget system for budget and management, the criminal justice information system. There are other systems that are going to be hosted centrally. At the moment, we only have 2 qualified Unix administrators and 1 Oracle database administrator who are responsible for managing 5 Unix services and 2 data marts and several other pieces of business. And we need this additional FTE in order to provide the depth and the backup for these kind of critical positions of systems administrators and database administrators. Program option package 345 occurs in this, on page 34 now. This program option package is under the umbrella of the number. We have 2 projects, and we have a project office, and we have positions for systems development and consulting in order to provision them. Now, I'll ask for your direction, Chair Hill, if you want to go into the detail of these policy option packages in this program description.
In your switch, Chair?
I do.
I think let's go into what you're talking about, because we'll take the experiment first.
All right. For the history, the e-procurement solution, the current vendor information program you may be familiar with, the VIP system, was installed in 1982. It's been substantially modified since that time, and currently it's difficult to use. It lacks technological improvements, labor intensive, becoming expensive to maintain. The project is a joint effort between CPPS and IR&D, Transportation Purchasing and Printing Section of Services of the Department of Administrative Services. CPPS is a business owner and project sponsor. IR&D is the project manager. One facet of this policy option package is to request limitation and position authority to hire managers for this project, other DAS projects, and even other agency projects. The portion relating to e-procurement is for $1.5 million, and it's to be funded through certificates of participation and recovered through fees charged to TPBS customers or fees charged to vendors. The project is in the earliest stages of organization and planning in this biennium.
So, just so I get, members of the committee, it's on page 232 of the budget narrative, which is the task of pink sheet, is the actual detailed budget narrative. Page 232 is the policy option package 245.
Let's see. I'll make sure I'm looking at the same budget narrative that you are. We're on page 348.
This is from the governor's recommended budget, Ann.
Okay. So this program option package is 345 that we're talking about.
Right.
And it starts on 232. Am I on your right page now? Okay. I have presented in the presentation, I purposely have pulled out two projects in the project office and the systems development and consulting position, because I don't think it's apparent why we would want to, what is supposed to happen with these projects or why you would want to fund them the way it's put together in the budget narrative. So I wanted to discuss the TPPS project first. It's to replace the VIP system and get caught up with current technology.
Jim?
Yes.
So I understand what the purpose of the policy option package is. What's the purpose of the project? So in terms of what is the goal of this effort?
So the purpose of the project is to replace the vendor information program. And what that program does, it electronically posts public solicitation bids and RFPs to the business community.
Have we looked at, or let me understand in terms of, are we, through this policy option package, are we going to have anything new at the end of this biennium, or is this, we're going to understand how we need to move forward in changing how we do procurement, because this doesn't seem like enough money to me if we're going to move to something like a Commerce One approach in terms of where we start moving electronic procurement out into the agencies, making decisions out farther, letting vendors come in. I mean, there's different, you know, private sector solutions which are being pushed out into the government space in terms of where there's greater efficiencies. And this just sort of seems, well, if I'm understanding this, we're going to have a website.
Chair Hill.
So.
This, and members of the committee, this project is in its earliest stages. We're at the requirements, cost-benefit, And when we reach the point that we are ready to talk about what the real functionality of this is, we will have more granularity about what kind of money we need for it and what it's going to deliver. Now, unfortunately, I wanted to have the business sponsor in the room today because they can speak to what this system is going to provide. Dugan's Head, as the business sponsor for purchasing, is not in state today, and I couldn't bring him here, but he would be much more articulate on the subject of what this thing is going to do. But you're absolutely right to ask the question, what does it do? And what I have to tell you is that this is a broad brush estimate. I do know that minimally they will replace the vendor information program, but there may be more.
This is included in the governor's budget, so this is reflected across state agencies. The fees are already reflected and rolled up in the increases in services and supplies or costs in other state agencies in the budget to generate this $1.5
million. I think Sarah can respond.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, this project is supposed to be funded with certificates of participation. So
do you identify yourself?
For the record, Sarah Gates, Budget and Management. Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, this project is to be funded with certificates of participation, so it would not be reflected in state agency fees for IR&D. TPPS would obviously be repaying it, and I don't have details on how that portion will be determined, but I can get that for you on Wednesday.
But who's going to pay for the seat? Okay, you'll get it for me Wednesday.
That specific information for the next meeting.
So it's not reflected in another agency budget?
Not at this time. I think in this budget, the funding will come from certificates of participation, subsequent biennium, the repayment of the...
It'll be a roll-up for next biennium then probably for the agency. Because that's the only place to get...
That only assumes we have something.
Well, that's true.
Representative Hill, Cam Burney is in the audience, and I didn't realize this, and he can answer your questions about what this is doing and how we'll be doing it.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cam Burney. I administer the Transportation Purchasing and Print Services Division, Department of Administrative Services. I think I'll be better able to tell you what the system is, let us down on, what it can't do, rather than, might be more articulate there than what we hope the system will do, though I'll hit that also. The system was a wonder back in the early 90s when it won several national awards through the Ford Foundation and Harvard's JFK School for innovation. But it's aged along with other systems of that generation.
We live in a fickle world.
Increasingly, vendor audiences have been impatient with the tediousness, the lack of a graphical interface with the current system, its slow speed, and its not infrequent downtime. The Governor's Small Business Council in a recent report specifically nailed the VIP as being especially unresponsive. This is a report to the governor, and asked that we begin anew with a more responsive system that could better deal the interrelations with the state government and the vendor community. Political subdivisions are increasingly reluctant to use this system, this non-graphical, this slow system, and some are even within the state of Oregon are setting off to create their own systems. And we think it's the advantage of the taxpayer if we can, and many are urging us to move forward, large cities are urging us to move forward so we can have a system through which they can advertise their solicitations.
So what do we currently spend on the VIPS system?
I don't, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did not bring financial data forward.
Okay, so I think in terms of, we'd like to understand what we're currently spending on it and that how these interrelate, because I'm assuming that the $1.5 million added to what you have at the end of the day will be something else. How would you describe what the something else is?
So something else would be graphical, something else would be faster with extreme reliability, that something else would have the ability to branch off and support other applications, such as, I believe that Ms. Terry has talked about, some of these later enhancements may be online catalogs through which agencies may order point and click, as well as perhaps online auction capabilities on the same system. It would be a joy to use by our political subdivision partners. Those are generalities, then.
So is your intention to, is this building something, or is this implementing something from the private sector that exists? I mean, example, Commerce One and these huge procurement, e-procurement initiatives that exist out there, in terms of are we going to participate in something like that, or are we going to go off and build ourselves something anew?
Chair Hill and members of the committee, we will always look at what is commercially available that fits our requirements once the requirements are clearly understood and defined here, and what it is that we want to build. We will look at what is commercially available first, and I think always do that rather than go for custom development.
So, okay, so now this begs the question, how did you come up with $1.5 million? If we don't know what we're building yet. I'm trying to understand. Yep. So it's just people? Or
the e-procurement portion of 345 represents about professional services, at $1.5 million, $1.1 million professional services. I'm sorry, $1.3 million professional services, and some estimate of 119,041 personal services and some associated data processing and services and supplies. Once again, there was an understanding that this project needed to be done. We understand that we're making estimates ahead of our finite requirements analysis and the cost benefit that needs to be done. And what we would expect in all of the projects that we're putting forward to you today, 241 and 345, what we expect is to continue to report to you, this committee and the legislature, as we make progress and as we get more granularity about the funding that we need based on our analysis, then we'll ask for it.
I'm trying to understand what were the assumptions you made? I'm trying to understand, what $1.3 million in professional services buys. Are we consulting? We're going to get a report that tells us that, yeah, this is a really good idea, we should, or is it, this is hammers and nails, and at the end of the day, we will actually have something?
What we can do is provide you with that basic information. I know there is background material on this for you. It does have a project manager in it. It has some systems types who would be working on it with consultants so they could maintain it afterwards. There's some estimate of what consulting fees might be there or what commercial off-the-shelf software might be available. They're all just estimates based on some comparison to projects or the like. But I would like to bring you the detailed information and the work that was done that went into this.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Lady.
Is there a glossary of all these acronyms somewhere? Because I am lost. I don't know what's TIPP and I don't know what's POP.
Chair Hill and Senator Yee, I don't have a glossary, and I do apologize for the acronyms. We'll provide one.
Yes.
And I can tell you that TPPS is the Transportation Purchasing Printing Services Division of the Department of Administrative Services. CAM is the director of that. And the POP we refer to are the Policy Option Packages.
Okay.
Any further questions? Okay, let's go to part two of 345.
This is the second project that is a DAS project that is to automate a substantially manual process for managing and tracking benefits for the public employee benefit information system. This new system should result in increased efficiency in management of member accounts, improved reporting, better decision support tools for management, and automated customer service capabilities for PEB and insurance carriers and agency payroll and personnel. Now, Mylea Ray, who is the director of this division, is in the audience and could speak to the business purpose of this system.
Hello, members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mylea Christensen-Ray, and I'm the administrator for the Public Employees Benefit Board. I will be brief in terms of just painting a backdrop of the business purpose for this project. We are a relatively small staff, 14 FTE. We manage benefits for 103,000 Oregonians. That includes state employees and family members. We currently have no automated system to provide services either on the front end to employees in terms of their enrollment. Each year annually during open enrollment. We also do not have an automated system to track our encounters with employees. We receive thousands of phone calls. All of that is done in a manual way in terms of recording information on paper files and filed in charts. And we actually began this project in terms of an exploration in 1998. In terms of looking at the opportunity, we have, during the last 2 years, reviewed through both a request for information and a request for proposal options, primarily commercial products that are available to use existing databases within the state, either the payroll system or the personnel database. And this project is basically the beginning step of implementing that program. The information related to the request actually came from the RFP process. We were not able to secure the vendors that met the specs, and also the pricing in terms of the program is reflected in the request here for this portion of the package.
So we have a plan for this?
We have preliminary program plans. We are now working with IRMD in cooperation to develop the next steps of this project.
Can you tell me who your response vendors were? I mean, there's huge corporations like PeopleSoft and HR Perspective and all these huge companies that do benefits packages, benefits management. I'm just wondering why they didn't meet your requirements and who responded back to your RFP.
Chair Hill and Representative Foutridge, the responses were not as good as we had expected. We received, I believe, three or four companies that responded. And after that response, we held individual interviews with the companies to get feedback, as well as from the companies who had not responded. And the feedback that we got was that in terms of the specifications for the RFP, they suggested that we take some different approaches the next time out in terms of how we outlined the program and the project for them. One of the reasons we're also collaborating with IRMD on this next opportunity. And you're right, we not only had access to, I would say, dozens in advance of commercial products we were familiar with, also products that included looking for service vendors in terms of people who also provide external services. We reviewed some of those opportunities as well. And there are literally dozens, if not perhaps 100, that we had identified in advance. So we're looking forward to this opportunity as an opportunity to really try to attract those existing commercial products out there and see if we can't be clearer in our approach in terms of the marketplace.
DAS IRMD has a report from a consultant which they delivered to the JIMTC committee in September as a response to one of the budget notes on the feasibility of implementing an ERP system. And I'm sure if we go back to that document, I would assume that someone had talked about how this value would cross-germinate. So we may look back at that document to see if there's any value out of it. So What are we buying here? The people again?
The Chair Hill, the request that we crafted here within 345 for PEB, $1,131,612 for professional services, $45,000 data processing, $145,182 for personal services. The personal services is for a project manager that will work in the IRMD project office and will coordinate this project. And these dollars were based on the information that was obtained during the RFP process, giving us a ballpark idea about what this kind of program would cost.
So, I'm sorry, how many, I'm just saying, I'm looking here at five principal executive manager, I don't know what that person would be.
One of those.
So the other four is in the printing?
In the project office. I'm sorry, when we get, Chair Hill, when we get to the next piece of...
Oh, is there another one? I thought there was only two of those.
It's PEB.
Oh, I see. Yes, Chair Hill, Sarah's found this for me. This IS-8 that is connected with this project is a position that will work on the systems development and consulting staff and will be responsible for the ongoing maintenance of this project.
Well, I'm trying to put it through. So of the 12 positions, one is in PEB and 11 are in the printing. Or is there something else? Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't there like two things in there?
Sarah Gage, Budget Management. Mr. Chair, there's one position that's associated with the PEB project, and I believe there are two positions that are associated with the printing project, and then there's project office and system development and consulting that there's a couple other pieces of this package, which Ann will get to in a few minutes,
okay.
Use the remainder of those positions.
On page 232 of the budget narrative, as outlined, the positions that are associated with TED and the positions that are associated with TPPS.
Okay. I'm keeping track here. We're down to three, so we've got nine more positions then that we got to account for in here.
If there are no other questions, we'll move on to...
Well, okay, but let's go back. So, if I'm understanding this correctly, we've got about one... How much is this total project?
$1.3
million. $1.3
million.
At the end of the biennium, what kind of a picture will we see?
Chair Hill, are you asking me what the product will be in terms of what the finished product?
At the end of the day, you've spent $1.3 million. You're going to come back to the legislature and declare success. What will you show us?
Chair Hill, I believe at the end of the project, what we hope to show you is a completed front end in terms of employees being able to use an automated system for enrollment so that they would be able to enroll online, which means that agencies wouldn't have to data enter that information. Insurance carriers wouldn't have to double enter that information, and we would be able to have the management tools that come from that kind of information. We would also have employees who have access to an automated system that allows them to record, capture, and track day-to-day operations for PEB and also produce the management tools from that experience.
Okay. From that perspective, when would that be implemented in your estimate?
Chair Hill, I think the project manager hopefully will help us to be able to put the timelines to that project. We have tried to time it around open enrollment, which is in the fall, so we have to be careful that the staff's commitments really launch and get quite significant in August till about December.
So in this year, 2000, so by 2002, this will exist?
It is not likely that it will occur this year. We are optimistic that by next year we can see some activity related to the implementation.
So how many people do you have today in PEB who sit around and do data entry?
Actually, the data entry, we have 6 counselors who provide customer service to state employees and their family members. They record the information in terms of the daily encounters in the paper files that I mentioned. The actual open enrollment data is captured in the agencies, 114 agencies, in the personnel and in the payroll sections. And that's who does the data entry of open enrollment forms and all the changes in the processing.
So if we were going to estimate in terms of the impact or savings on agencies,
Chair Hill, for PEB, in terms of the daily activities, we believe that this is the only rational way to allow us to continue to do the work that we do with the small staff that we have. For the agencies, when we estimated this before in terms of heads-down data entry, we estimated originally about 4 to 5 FTEs, but that's across the 114 agencies. In terms of all of the staff do other jobs, but a portion of their job each year is the open enrollment. But we believe that, our best estimates were that it was probably equivalent to 4 to 5 FTE in the across the 114 agencies.
Okay. So you're telling me there's no savings in PEB. The next natural question is what happens to those 6 bodies that are doing data entry today, and then what happens to the 4.5 bodies that are spread across 114 agencies? When they no longer have to do this.
Chair Hill, for the PEB staff, I didn't mean to leave you with the impression that those individuals do data entry. Their primary function is to serve employees and their families and insurance carriers in trying to determine eligibility and trying to help clear up health system problems in terms of trying to get people coverage. The efficiency component for their job is we have actually done that with the same amount of staff for over 4 years. And in order to be able to keep up with the complexity, the growth of the population, and all of those reasons, I believe that the business case for not having them do that on paper is compelling in terms of moving forward.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just trying to understand. We have we invest in a great efficiency, but yet there's no savings. And I'm just, so everybody's overworked today. We're going to give them a better tool. There's no efficiencies.
Chair Hill, in the Ways and Means presentation last week for the Public Employees Benefit Board, we were able basically to present a status quo budget with a slight reduction from 9901. We have basically been able, as I said, to put that budget forward for 3 consecutive biennia in hopes that we will be able to implement this project, but you are correct that there are no, I don't have any reductions for you on the staff side. And if I may, this, from the agency perspective, the payroll and personnel individuals who do this work are typically assigned to a myriad of other tasks related to payroll and personnel. A lot of times, temporary help is hired during open enrollment to be able to meet the demands of open enrollment.
There's supplies that can be reduced. So we should be able to go back and capture and understand what we do to meet these requirements. I'm just trying to, there's got to be some efficiencies in this somewhere, and so I'm just trying to understand how we capture it when we're successful. Let's provide the right tools to our employees so they can be successful, and then, you know, they can go do other things which are, you know, be more beneficial. Let's have that discussion rather than just gloss over the fact that, you know, we're going to go and do a project here. So we see this. By 2003, January of 2003, or October 2002, right, when open enrollment is?
Chair Hill, I would hope that we would have this program well underway by next year. In the absence of a project manager and being able to actually to bid this project, I'm a little reluctant, but that would certainly meet PEB's best wishes in terms of being able to move forward as quickly as possible.
Okay.
The next section as part of that same program option package, is requesting 5 additional information system specialists to support existing disaster management systems development group. This is in response to audit findings and the deficiencies in support of the state financial management system and the organization. In addition, support for the proposed fee replacement for the CPS and the proposed head benefit automation would be above and beyond current workloads tasks in this unit. For this unit, they are fee for service, and the cost would be recovered by fees assessed to the user customer. So basically, the PEB funding would pay for these positions and systems development and consulting.
Okay. So, PEB, where does that come from?
The PEB funding is by COP authority, COP.
So we're going to do COPs to pay for it, and then PEB is going to contract with you, and then you're going to hire 5 people.
We're hiring 1 project manager, and there will be 1 full-time information systems specialist with systems development and consulting to assist in the implementation and the ongoing maintenance of this project.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So it's 1 project manager for the project office and 1 information system specialist for PEB.
Okay. So, okay.
Okay.
So that adds 2 more. Okay. So now I have a grand total of 5.
Right.
And 12.
Okay, so if we move on to page 38, and we're on page 39, this is the final piece of the 4 request. This is the IRMD project office, and in this request, we are asking for limitation for 5 IT project managers and a senior manager for the project office in 1 support position. This is to support existing and projected needs for the project management office. What we want to do is to create a central resource available to all state agencies to be able to provide project management for the enterprise-wide projects that come to us. For instance, right now we are in the process of hiring the project manager for the public safety data warehouse project that will work in conjunction with the program manager there. We consider the PEB project a statewide project. We would have a project manager out of this office. That's 1 of those 5 positions. The e-procurement project would be 1 of those 5 positions. And we have other projects that come at us all the time, and we would hire, these are all fee-for-service, we would hire the project managers as required to lead statewide projects. And some of the benefits of this approach is that we can bring some of the standards for project management that we have been building in the state, especially through our statewide training program. We have something like 400 certified project managers in the state now, and we want to continue to promote that culture of using the best practices with project management. So these are, for this request, we have the manager of the office, an executive support specialist, and 5 project managers. Does that bring the tally up to 12?
7 in next.
That's 7. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. What's your question?
We just discuss. I'm trying to understand the revenue side.
Okay.
Or how this is going to get paid for in terms of all these projects. And I'm trying to look at your pages 234, which I believe is this policy option package, which in total is $6 million, a little over $6 million. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to see, I understand that part of it's going to come from COPs. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
I understand that like 1.5 million is from COPs. I just don't see the revenue side of this. If I'm missing something, is there an analysis of where the revenues are coming from?
Mr. Chair, once again, Sarah Gates, Budget and Management, Representative Patridge. Initial funding for some of these projects will be through the issuance of certificates of participation. But then if you refer back to page 233, you will see a little paragraph at the bottom of that section that talks about revenue source. And that talks about how the funding will come back from TPPS and the same thing for PEB. You know, how TPPS will then in turn repay the COPs and how PEB will repay the COPs. That section will address.
So this is what you'll get me tomorrow then?
I will get you details on this that paragraph, yes.
Because I'm trying to figure out what are we funding with COP, are we funding personnel with COPs but then are going to be caught up in the budget roll-up next time in additional fees or...
What is the stabilization reserve account?
Chair, I would ask that you ask Melia Ray to come back up and explain that to you.
Okay.
She can give you the most concise answer.
I think with respect to the project people funded by COPs, they leave when the project's done. There isn't a roll-up of costs there.
So they're a limited duration position.
Limited duration, or they may be project people that would go on to different projects, but they aren't.
Well, before we go there, let's, it's nice to say that. How many limited duration positions are you eliminating in your total budget?
This is very confusing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, currently there are, in the base budget adjustments of phase out, there are no positions phasing out into what's called package 020.
Mm-hmm.
There are positions that are transferring to other divisions in what's called space, but no one-time project type staff that are phasing out. It is possible that these project people could be looked upon as one-time project staff. That is
highly unlikely, given our past track record.
It depends on how it is specified in the budget report.
Well, that's what my question is. And can you identify of these 12 people who's going to be paid for out of COPs then if you're going to give us some of this information tomorrow, and whether those positions are limited duration positions or whether they're roll-up or whether we're going to be caught up in a roll-up of those positions next biennium?
I think is there three will be COP?
And if they're going to float off to other positions, where that's likely to be and who's going to pay for them if they continue in service? Please. This is very confusing.
So the question I had was, what is the stabilization reserve account?
Chair Hill, for the record, my name is Mylia Christensen-Ray, Administrator of PEB. The stabilization fund is a non-limited fund that the Public Employee Benefit Board operates on behalf of the state and its employees. It's used to help offset increased premium costs and a number of other finite items that are also stipulated in the budget process.
How does the money flow into that?
The money comes from unused employer contributions for employees who opt not to participate in the health programs. It comes from interest, and it also comes from any settlements with the insurance carriers.
How much is that fund today?
Currently, the balance is about $22 million. That's approximate. I could get you an exact fund.
So how often do you use that?
Actually, the funds are being used on a monthly basis right now to offset the significant increases in health premiums, to offset those premiums for employees, and they were used the last several years as well.
So is it really budgeted for?
Hill.
I'm just curious, at the end of the biennium, do we have a number we need to estimate will be in the fund?
In terms of a balance, I cannot get you that. Actually, I have copies of the budget that was presented at Ways and Means. I'd be delighted to provide that with the information that you have for us.
And then in the next, after the comma, it says, PEB sources will include a transfer from the standard insurance mutualization trust account.
Chair Hill, when we made this note, we wanted to identify several options that we thought were appropriate options for the repayment. Fed's budget is relatively small. It's just slightly over $2 million, our limited budget for operations. So to be able to finance a $1.3 million expense with that kind of budget is a pretty much of a challenge. We get our revenues for daily operations through administrative fees that are added onto medical and dental premiums. And so we basically looked at that as an option. The one that's referenced here, Standard Insurance Company demutualization, is actually currently in Marion County Court. And
that was my next question I was going to go to in terms of, it doesn't seem like a very stable source of funding.
It was basically listed as a potential in the event that, again, there are multiple options of that outcome. So what we wanted, and that's actually what is on Ann's slide, is that the most likely scenario is that the fees would be repaid through the administrative fee that PEB basically charges and returned, and that would be the primary source of funds.
So it's going to flow back out to the agency.
The actual administrative fee is a combination of both employer and employee charges, because it's basically on the medical and dental premiums. And it's 0.6%, just so you'll know.
Is this fund set up by statute, or is it set up by administrative rule, or how's it governed and how's it set up?
Chair Hill, Representative Patridge, the statutes that basically forms PEB do have specific references to the fund, and there is also an opportunity, we hope, to clarify some of the information about these in a Senate bill that's introduced as well, and I'd be delighted to get you some more information. I have the reference site and my budget information.
That's fine. You can give it to me later.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 0.6% fee paid by the employer and the employee. How long has it been at 0.6%?
Chair Hill, Representative Lowe, this is the third year that it's been at 0.6%.
And how much does that come to altogether?
Chair Hill, Representative Lowe, if you are looking at annual, in terms of annual amounts, a little bit over $1 million for the biennium. Our total budget is approximately $2.4 million, and that pays for our day-to-day operations in terms of the PEB budget. There are specific statute references to the amount that PEB can charge in terms of an administrative fee. It is a reference. We have a limit of up to 2% of premium, and again, we've been at 0.6% for the last 3 years.
And who decides whether or not it rolls up to 2%? That's within your rulemaking authority?
Chair Hill, Representative Lowe, it is in statute that we have the opportunity, and the board makes that decision on an annual basis in conjunction with the budget process for anticipating approved costs.
And how much would you have if you rolled it up to 2%?
Chair Hill, Representative Lowe, I can get that information for you.
Mr. Chair, not that I think you should.
It would be approximately a little over 3 times as much, because 0.6% multiplied by 3, you get.
I know. I just wanted you to do the math. Not that I think it should be rolled up, but the thought.
Okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, what is the Standard Insurance demutualization trust account?
Went over that. That's the settlements, or from the money the state received when Standard Insurance went from a mutual company to a stock-based company, and that money is sitting in a trust fund right now because it's in litigation, because employees paid some of those premiums, and the question is whose money is it?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
Any further questions?
When you bring back the data for us that we've requested, would you be willing to show me, say, a sample of what a roll-up would do to an individual's, state employee's paycheck? I want to see what, take mine, it's not much, and show me what the roll-up would do to the paycheck and what the contribution would look like. Could you please? I need a visual aid to understand this a little bit better.
It comes out of the state agency.
Comes out of state agency budget, doesn't come out of the individual. She just said that it comes employer and employee each make a contribution.
Chair Hill, Representative Loaf, I understand your question. I think I can easily get what you're looking for. If you're looking for the cost of the administrative fee on medical and dental premium at an employee level, I can get you that information. Is that what you're interested in, just to clarify?
Thank you for phrasing it much better than I did.
And I guess secondarily, just to clarify the latter issue, it comes from an employee and employer contribution because, for example, if the amount of the plan exceeds the employer contribution and the employee's paying out of pocket, then there is a portion that the employee pays. So it is correct that the agencies pay and also the employees pay.
But probably the majority of funds out of agencies.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
With that, I think we'll stop there. We only have 20-some-odd more pages to go over the intro. We will be back at it on Wednesday. Any closing comments at this point?
We'll get the information that we promised you.
Okay. We'll be back here Wednesday. Without objection, we're adjourned.